Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
You keep saying legal legends.
Legal legends.
Legal legends.
That's the name of the game.
Like, oh, they do. It's the side scroller is a music rhythm game made by the Bit Trip people. I guess it comes from.
Did
like
you play
a,
it?
No. I, you know, at this point, I'm a league head now, so I probably should.
You should play it. It's a League of Legends story.
Who has never touched? Wait, have you never touched
a
MOBA?
Fuck,
and you never.
Fuck that
I'm
game.
Losing my mind.
Fuck that genre.
I am saying
that
I
game.
Keep hearing MOBAs? Legal, like legal seafood, like legal activity versus illegal.
We're just saying the name of the game, Rob.
League of Legends.
League of Legends.
Okay. Yeah, League of Legends.
Okay. Yep.
What's wrong, Rob?
Hello, Internet. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Klubik. We're here to around the campfire to talk about legal legends.
Legal legends.
Legal legends.
My co-host, Kato. Hey, Kato.
I love MOBAs. MOBAs are great. I play many of them. How do you feel about MOBAs, Patrick?
I don't like them, but I like the lore.
Great.
Big legal lore head.
Legal oh, what? Lore?
Wow.
Wow.
Jinx.
Uh-huh. Yeah?
Yeah?
What about Jinx?
She seems cool.
She's complicated. You know?
This is.
I mean, is Rob Harley Quinn?
No. No, well, I don't know. That's the thing. I don't know, Rob.
Do you have
I don't
a Harley Quinn?
I don't know what the lore is like in the game, but that is not true in the show Arcane. That would be an oversimplification of their character arc, for sure.
I don't know anything about League of Legends. but despite having many dear friends try and get me into something called ARAMS or something like that.
No.
And there's like a Wild Rift out there or something like that. But I have not dabbled. But I have played Legends of Runeterra. So I recognize, and I've played a little Teamfight Tactics. So I have a little ability to recognize character League of Legends characters, but I don't know anything about how they interact with each other.
The reason I can't play these games is because I know I need to stay in my lane, and my lane is not in a MOBA.
Right?
Would you say your lane is like, yeah? God damn it! How to beat me to it?
Rob is pretending we're not already in the podcast.
I think so. He hasn't.
Like, this is Rob. We're here.
This is it. It started.
This is staying in. It started. I did the intro. You're good. Rob's also here. How's it going, Rob?
Oh, you know, I'm thrilled. I'm happy to be talking about League of Legends.
Legends?
I thought Bobby Donnell was a really strong contender for a while, but the meta did shift, and like Harvey Specter was coming on strong, and like you get him if you pick Mike Ross for mid, and then like put Donna in bot in support, you've just got a killer legal lineup.
Yeah. Agreed.
Fuck.
The only League of Legends there should be is the Apex Legends.
Wow, what a pivot!
Yeah, they should all go to law school.
Wow.
Yeah, no, I turn it into a visual novel. Like, what if the Apex Legends crew?
The IMC shouldn't have been allowed to do any of this. We need to stop playing this like survival game against each other and start filing a class action lawsuit. Except no, nobody's going to know what the IMC did. Because they're not going to sell Titanfall 1 anymore.
Oh my God.
That I'm upset about this. I'm like really bummed. I mean, I hope it's for like, you know, reallocating those resources towards
which Titanfall. Resources? Isn't that game unplayable?
It still God, had servers. It still had servers live.
I think that is like a tacit admission that they like, look, I guess if people want to be out here playing this, but we're not going to fix it. Like, I'm sorry. Yeah. Like, I realize it is a haven for cheaters and hackers, but I guess it's irresponsible to keep making money off of that, tricking people into thinking there's a game to play.
Yeah, I mean, why
people could really just play?
You could just play Titanfall 2.
Yeah,
for yes. now,
or Apex Ow. Legends.
I mean, they did they, in that games, statement. They did. Games. They did. There was like a dangling thread of. That Titanfall was not going away. There's a future, you know, it will never, I sincerely doubt it's Titanfall 3. I still cling to our theory that we had before that they will build. It's like full circle, like Apex Legends saved Titanfall's universe so that they can make the single player Apex Legends game that is actually secretly Titanfall 3. Titanfall 3.
If there's that fucking yeah. mechs in it, that's fine. I don't care if they have to change the name, but god damn it.
Yeah, right. 100%. Who cares? Like, right. like if you get your accidental Titanfall 3 by telling Apex Legends millions of players, and we're doing, you know, PvE, and it's going to be a $60 campaign. Like, doesn't that sound great?
You know what's and the ultimate mechs. Battle pass is this premium product.
Oh God. Well, I'm you know, is it, didn't they also announce that like the head of Respawn is like
yes.
Yep.
So Vince Zampella's like in charge now of Battlefield sort of, but like this, like it seems kind of hard to parse. Like people left DICE and Vince Zampella now just had Battlefield's like universe like put under his supervision, but like I'm not like it's a reshuffling I can't quite parse yet, and I'm also not sure, like, is this EA saying like, yeah, 2042 kind of sucks and like heads are rolling, or is this, hey, the people who fucked up 2042 have now driven multiple people out of the company and now like we are fixing it by appointing ourselves to these new positions.
I might be incorrect here, but in reading about some of like the, not like public postmortems, but people looking back and like some of the folks that worked on 2042, like it was a lot of like newcomers, especially like on the heads of creative, like they, DICE has bled a lot of talent. It seems like they lost a bunch of senior people when it sounds like EA or Disney, I don't know who passed on doing like a Battlefront 3. So I don't know. It seems like a company in transition, and then this game underperforming but probably doing okay in the long run, just because it is Battlefield, but it seems like if you're gonna make a shift, now is probably the time. But it's like Respawn seems to be in such a good spot that, you know, it would be a bummer if Respawn like took a hit as a, but who knows,
that's what worries me. I don't want you to get distracted.
I don't know.
Right. Don't get distracted from the goal here.
Yeah. I think the weird thing though is like, but Zampella's not really in that sort of direct oversight role with like Apex and stuff, right? Like, no. I mean, he's like, he is sort of a studio director type character, and this has been just more stuff added to his portfolio. I think for me, it's just like, maybe it'll work out. It's a reshuffling. I don't know where it goes. But also, it sort of seems like there just might be, to your point, Patrick, there might be some issues around DICE and like just the like amount of bandwidth they're able to bring to bear on what they've been asked to do with Battlefield 2042.
Yeah, stop asking them to make a game every 3 years, because yeah. it doesn't like the problems of 2042. Yes, like everything on AAA. Everything in video games, like everything has been impacted by COVID, right? Like there are like asterisks on everything, but like this has happened to DICE before. And at some point, you know, especially if they're not going to ask them to just turn into a service company that like you made the forever Battlefield, like now you, that's just what you do. Maybe they need more time to make those games. And I think part of bringing Zampella and like, I think what was the quote? Like, we want to make like a shared Battlefield universe, which I feel like is just, a fancy way of saying we're going to make more Battlefield games, which is what you used to do and how you got like a game like Bad Company out of it. And maybe that's just like what's really happening here is like, hey, Vince is like a pretty smart guy that knows how to make action games and shooter games. Maybe we should let him think how do we make three Battlefield games in the next 10 years and not just ask DICE to build another big one?
Yeah.
And like barely give it over the finish line. I mean, the game still doesn't have voice chat. Lots of people use Discord and that being a promised feature, like coming in the next month.
In a game that has bizarre. A four-person mode, in a like that, like I can understand with their, like conquest mode or breakthrough. Yeah, you don't really need. I mean, there are probably some situations where it would help, but I don't need to talk to these fuckers. But in the four-person mode, I do need to talk to those fuckers. I need to like we need to be like, hey, are we heisting? I think that. That is weird. I think 2042 is just in such a weird place. And I think Battlefield is in a strange place. I suspect over time it will get to par. But I wouldn't say that is like a success either. I think sometimes there's a narrative of like, you know, people always hate Battlefield games at launch and it turns out to be good in the end. Well, they sort of, yeah, they're good at eventually hitting a certain like experience and quality bar with Battlefield, but that doesn't necessarily mean like this is an unusually poor Battlefield at launch,
right?
And if it works out, it will be because people fixed it.
Well, not Battlefront equally was a complete trash fire when it launched. Like, granted, who know, you know, that may have been EA pushing the monetization. You know, that was at the height, the apex, if you will, of the loot box discussion as that game became sort of like ground zero forward, you know, getting rid of that stuff in a lot of mainstream games, or AAA games. But I don't know. That studio just seems in a weird place. Their identity is Battlefield, but they need some of the weight taken off their shoulders. And it seems a little directionless in terms of what are they doing, why are they doing it. And so maybe someone like Zampella
It just seems like to me if they're constantly playing catch up to get to like a, you know, sort of the standard of the landscape, that standard is going to keep like moving, you know, a foot, a mile.
Which is the whole point of being a service game is like, what if we were in perpetual beta?
Well, and I think this is kind of what frustrated me about like 2042 in particular is I actually don't think the series is directionless unless you just looked at what you'd made and were like, well, I don't like that. And then you don't have a vision for what comes after. I think this is the frustrating thing is like, there's a lot of, and they're sort of highlighting that there's increased numbers of folks sort of taking leading roles with Battlefield that have Halo experience, that have Call of Duty experience. And that's not to say those are not like games that like do to some extent define the space, but I would argue Battlefield historically has also defined that space. 2042, one of the issues did seem to be that like they wanted to break away from what they were doing with Battlefield 5. And then they just didn't figure out what direction that was going to go. It's like, well, we're not making Battlefield 5. And then here's the game. It's not Battlefield 5. And then there's the like Tarkov or like Dark Sector mode that's sort of built into it, but also kind of hived off from the experience. It's such a strange thing. I don't think the series had lost its way until like this one was kind of just driven into a cul-de-sac, but I don't think it was on a trajectory.
It's like a series that was Battle Royale before Battle Royale was a thing, and yet it seems to have been unable to capitalize or navigate that space as it exploded in between the last major installments.
No, wait, when were they about Battle Royale?
Well, I just mean if Battle Royale is...
Oh, you mean they're the equivalent of...
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
like,
okay.
Their Battlefield's thing has always been shitloads of players in a space at once. And like, yes, like Fortnite, PUBG,
like defined that into a genre, but like Battlefield was playing in that space
right
long before. And then I think that's part of their issue is like in building games, you know, 3-4 years apart, it's very difficult to be nimble. I mean, like Fortnite was an accident, you know, it was a, you know, they were jumping off something happening in the space. And right. that's really difficult to do the way DICE builds their games.
Right. And Warzone was terrible at launch. It was like virtually unplayable for a while before even like the technical stability was in a place where it was like a fun game to play without getting like dropped out. And it still has constant server dropout issues.
Huge cheating problems. I mean, like, Apex, enormous.
Yeah. Apex has been like lots of professional players have quit Apex because of cheating problems in ranked games. So like all of these games, but I guess the point of it is the core gameplay experience is valuable enough that
yeah,
it keeps the audience there, even if like the ranked, you know, some ranked players drop or professional players drop off or whatever, but at least the like passion for the game itself is still there.
And the free to play stuff helps a lot, right? Look, like Halo Infinite, like, yeah, every day is this battle pass is complete. It seems to have gotten better and they've been very responsive. But like that's a case in which that game being free to play, the core game being by all accounts the best that Halo has been in 15 years, right? Like everyone really likes playing it. And they can all, you know, as much as they can weather a bad headline because the next day they can be like, and now you just get an XP up the ass. Like, yeah, who wants more XP? and like they're able to weather that storm because the core game works. Cheating is becoming an issue on the PC version, but they'll be fine. You know, presuming over the next, you know, 2 months, they are able to massage all that stuff, but you just have a higher floor when you're starting there, as opposed to, I think people are just so much quicker, you know, to turn vile, to spin on turn on a game when you're paying $60 for it, as opposed to the free to play stuff. In some ways that gives you an advantage with just how your relationship with the audience.
Yeah. And I guess the thing I will say as well is the thing that maybe Battlefield does have cutting against it as well. In addition to that issue of like sometimes the bones are good or not good. But like at this point, there are so many people who have different, like, I really liked when Battlefield was like this. Yeah. And so like at this point, you are trying to speak to so many audiences and you tend to be pitching them all the same way. Like, you know, with this Battlefield, it's really going to like get that classic Battlefield feeling. And that means something different to every single person who has ever played Battlefield, right? Yeah. And so I think the kind of like the thing I do have a lot of sympathy for is this comes out and suddenly I've never heard so much enthusiasm for Battlefield 5 until this game came out. And then I'm like playing on servers and I'm like, man, good thing they shut down Battlefield 5 for this. And I'm like, but I thought people hated Battlefield 5, but now they love it now. Okay, cool. And like, there's a lot to love there. It is a cool game, but I can sort of see how you're going to now just have a higher level of toxicity in the conversation around your game because you keep trying to like play this game of, all right, it's the Battlefield you love, except you've made like a million of these games by this point. And so most people are like interpreting that one way, and then the reality is going to be disappointing. And at launch, that disappointment just curdles immediately into real anger, unless the like core game is really, really strong. And this one wasn't last I played, like about a week ago. Huge patch just dropped, so I need to get another shot. But like, there's just a lot of conceptual level stuff that I think is going to take a while to pay off if it ever does. Patrick,
that's all I got. I got nothing else to say about Battlefield, the game that I don't play.
You're hosting, Patrick. Make the segue.
He really caught me off guard. I wasn't ready. Playing
Kato.
Oh, that's fine. Okay.
Tell us about that Midnight Protocol.
Wow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Perfect
segue.
Rob did that
just to set me up for failure so that he could just take it away from me. Fucker. Fine, go ahead, Kato.
All right. Yeah, Midnight
You're
Protocol.
Now.
I've talked about this a little bit before. There was a demo during one of the like summer demo fests, but Midnight Protocol is a turn-based hacking tactics game, basically. It's one of these. It's like fully, what's the word? I think it's fully diegetic insofar as like you are using your keyboard to type in commands and move around a space, a computer screen. Like there's never anything that is outside of what you would be looking at as a computer screen if you were actually the person that you're playing as. You're playing as a hacktivist called Data, who was recently doxxed, but the court case against you didn't stick, so you get released. But you're after the person who doxxed you. You're trying to figure out how someone could get that information when you've been so careful to keep your real life identity.
Must secret. Be someone you know.
Well, who could maybe?
Maybe someone you trust, even count as a friend.
God, it does feel like that is maybe where this is going. You do have a couple of hacker friends that you get back in touch with now that you're like back in the game. It eases you in with some kind of easy stuff. It's like, yeah, you've been in holding for too long here, which I guess like you were in jail for a while before your trial happened. So, you know, but
sounds about right.
Yeah. Essentially, the setup is mechanically you're looking at kind of a series of connected nodes that all do kind of different things. Some of them hold data that you can download. Some of them hold money that you can take. Some of them encrypt other nodes, kind of like a connected, what's the word? Like a, not a mind map, but you know, like when you just like a red string theory, string, like
Charlie,
yeah.
Charlie from
Pepe Sylvia.
What is he talking about? Okay, there you go.
The maps kind of look like that.
That's cool.
Basically, you're typing in commands. So every time you want to move from one node to another, you have to like you type in that command, and that takes up an action. You have two actions per turn, and then the server ticks, and basically each server has. Like all servers kind of as a standard feature of every server that exists in this universe has a trace protocol that is trying to figure out if someone is, you know, infecting it, if somebody's hacking it. And you have tools that basically amount to programs that lessen the chance that the computer will find you. And each server takes a certain amount of time or a certain amount of ticks of this trace protocol actually succeeding to before you're tracked. And then you have to jack out really quickly because it starts to drain credits. And there's only one of the things about this game is that it's very difficult to you can when you're in a like run, when you're in a hack, you can reboot and start from the beginning. But once you've been found, your only option is to hit exit, and then you can't enter that system again. Like, you failed that mission, and if you didn't get any credits from it, you're done. And you need credits in order to buy new, better programs. So it's kind of like, if you see just before the trace, like, actually hits, you want that's, like, your one chance to be like, okay, never mind, I'm going to take a mulligan on this run, and you can do that. But otherwise, it's interesting. Like, you have to think, so, like, the way that the, like, system that the cloak program works. You have 75% chance to not get caught by the trace each turn.
Mm-hmm.
That requires 8 slices of processing. This is what they call it, slices. If you want to run a
I'm
different program,
hungry.
You gotta yeah.
You got 2 in the morning. I've got a hankering for
some slices.
3 slices. Yeah. The real Midnight Protocol.
Yeah, right.
It's like rip open a bag of Bugles.
My Domino's delivery.
And they spill over the floor, and you clean up the cheese that has come off the frozen bag.
But basically, if you can use less slices and it works worse, right? It's like it falls down to a 54% chance of protecting you. Mm-hmm. But that's you. But you need slices in order to work other programs. So it becomes a balancing act of like, all right, for this turn, I'm going to leave my cloaking program up at full and I'm just going to move around and get in position to then drop my leeching program onto this financial node and then move over here and drop a decrypting program onto this encryption node. And it's like, I don't know. It's just like one of those things where like it feels like the most hacker man I've felt in a long time. Aside from that one Zachtronics game that was actually writing code, but this is easier. This is like a lot more like, oh, this is a game they've made to make you feel the feeling of like writing code and doing things in a networked system. That's been really fun. And there's a lot of options about like, there's like a lot of optional shit that's just on these servers where like, if you can figure out how to, you know, like, there's all that clock is always running. The like chance that the computer is going to find you is always there. So if you can figure out a way to like circumvent that or like stave that off for long enough, you can like, for example, I got somebody asked me like, hey, I may or may not have accidentally uploaded some photos of me being a cheating asshole to our family's photo. our family's fucking photo server. Can you hack in
the iCloud photo album?
Yeah.
Oh, family. No, I shouldn't have put that on Plex.
Yeah. Can you
all... Sweetie, don't look.
I don't understand how this works, but the way it was like, I'll pay you money to go on the because I think it's because it's gone to the central server, right? Like he needs to get it off the central server, which is like iCloud's servers, right? Like he can't delete them from there to make sure they don't get synced down to his wife's one. So you can go in there, find the photos, and then leak into straight to her anyways. Like I fleeced this guy. Basically the way that the interactions work is all through email. And you like type out, you kind of just smash the keyboard or you can hit tab to like auto complete it. But it's like you're typing out back and forth to these people. And I negotiated with this guy in order to get him higher and higher money. I got him to like the max amount he would pay me. And then I asked for an advance and he gave me that advance. And then I go in, I see both his bank account and his wife's bank account in there. I could go in and, steal all his money and took the photos out and sent them to her in an email anyways. And it was beautiful.
Yo,
like the mission is like, rules. Go in and do like, you have like a lot of flexibility and like what you decide to do with like the things people tell you to do. Right. Like there's another one where some system admin is like an ex hacker who's now gone white hat. Right. He's working for a company like to protect the company from attacks. And he basically hires you to do some penetration testing. But it's like on a dummy backup of that system that happens to also be connected to the actual system. So if you want, you can like spend some time to like poke around what their live servers are doing and maybe get into their bank a little bit or like find out some dirt on what the company is doing and leak one of their algorithms to the internet. It's really like those are some of the neater parts of it. It's just like, there's lots of little things that you can do off to the side that are very like, just like great narrative options of like, oh yeah.
These interfaces look great too.
Yeah. Like it looks really neat. It's also like really cool to, like really easy to read. And like all of it has this, this great, basically one of the thing that like you run into that stops you is usually ICE, what is that called? Yeah. I mean, I forget what the actual.
We all know about black guys. We're all hackers here.
Yeah, exactly. but they make it so that you have kind of two options. You can use a sniffer program to kind of figure out where the ICE is. If there's ICE between you and the next node, you can tell it to sniff there. But that program is up for two turns and it uses two slices. So you're committing those two slices and if there's nothing there, you've basically wasted it, right? Or you can just run into the ICE. Usually what that does is pretty bad, but not something that you can, that will kill you outright, for example. Like, it's always like, either it's a wall. So I run into the wall, I bounce back, and it'll tick up the trace. So you can kind of play it fast and loose depending on your style. There's like different options for like, okay, actually defeating or deleting ice, or just tunneling through ice is one of the other options. And it's this great, like, if you can think enough moves ahead of like, I know that I see that this server has a trace of 9. That means like, if I can, I have not, if you like don't play with any stealth programs, you have 9 turns to finish it. And I feel mm-hmm. like a lot of these levels are finishable that way. It seems fucking harrowing to me, which is why I play with stealth programs. But like that mm-hmm. playstyle is also available, which is really neat. And like, yeah, I think narratively the like amount of stuff that you can kind of do, like I explained the earlier thing, I was like, I wonder if it'll let me do things with these photos once I have them, or is it just like, I'm going to complete this mission for this dude? And it does right. the thing where like, I could either delete them, keep them as blackmail, or send them to his wife. Right. So like, it's like always, it always seems to think, consider things in that way of like, you have kind of agency as like a hacker to, if you're going to complete the like thing, you just take the money and run, or like try to like, yeah, fleece the dude and still expose his infidelity, which that I think rules. Is really neat that they're playing in that space. And I'm like 2 hours in, and there's a whole hardware system apparently that I haven't unlocked yet, where like you can buy different chipsets, and like, I don't know how long this game is, but like, I'm already like super invested. And so I'm curious to see how this expands, because there's already so much to it.
This reminds me, I think I talked about it a little bit at the time, but like just to re-up it. I think Night School made a phone game based on Mr. Robot.
Oh my God.
Where
like a mobile game or
it is a text adventure played in a texting interface.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes. Yeah.
And I remember like one of the most uncomfortable things, because basically the conceit is like you end up with one of the crews. I think the Darlene's actually the sort of leader, the sort of co-leader of F Society. You end up with her cell, and she's just like, well, you need to like, if you do not like carry out some shit for us, I will fuck up your life. So it's just easier for you to impersonate me and do some hacker shit.
Yeah.
And so you're basically like doing social engineering shit via text through like this little Mr. Robot app. And one of the most uncomfortable things is like this thing where you blackmail this dude who's an engineer at like Iron Mountain, which is like the major facility they hack in the first season. Mm. And like you end up, it's just a deeply uncomfortable sequence as you, and this thing plays out in like realish time. Right. So like you will be sending this person like just bomb dropping texts at like 11 a.m. and like you'll have the night to think it over at 11 p.m. and the next morning
he will finally be like,
yeah. So one of the most uncomfortable things, it was like, you blackmail this guy because he has like some heinous infidelities in his background. And like he's just pleading with you not to fuck up his family, his life, everything. You're like, yeah, just do this thing and you won't. And you are asking him to do some like incredibly dangerous shit, and he does it. But at the end of it, he's like, so we're good, right? And like, yeah, we're good. At the end of it, like there's this heel turn where he's like, so now that you know, we're never gonna deal with each other again and you got what you want, I'm just gonna tell you, I don't give a shit about you, and I don't give a shit about what I did. I like it. I like the people. I like being like living a double life, and I like, I'm supposed to feel bad, and I just don't. And I was like, cool. Texting your son and your wife. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Bye. Like, same thing. Yeah, where it was
bud.
Like,
yeah. Yeah, bud. Yeah.
God, it's
like,
very funny.
What do you think? What do you think I'm gonna do here, buddy?
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah, there's only been like one or two of those like kind of social engineering like moments so far, but they've been pretty fun. And even just the like the more kind of bog standard ones where you're trying to avoid hitting too much ice and getting to like a company's secrets have been fun, and there's always it's escalating in a fun way where they keep adding like more offshoot, like more paths to follow, like a little like mini side story where you're just, you know, open sourcing the like a company's algorithm that they were going to use to I forget exactly what it was, but like it lost them billions of dollars, so it felt great. Yeah,
perfect.
It's just like, yeah, fuck it, everyone can use this now. You don't have anything special, so yeah, it's really neat.
Shit, I gotta take a look at this. This looks awesome.
You just, you know, pair that with whenever you get around to Michael Mann's Black Hat, Rob.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
This is a genius idea. Brilliant. Now, admittedly, good chance this game is way better than that movie.
I feel like I've heard that, doesn't that movie have like a mythical director's cut that people claim like it makes it good? I feel like
it would need to be extreme. Like, mind you, he does. Like, I think Miami Vice is a movie that he made that like had a mythical director's cut that actually did. Like, oh, I get it now. Black Hat has, there's a lot of things to it. One, ultimately, the main characters of the story are really the main character of the story is a like Chinese cyber cop. But the movie's kind of like, well, it's got to be about Chris Hemsworth.
I was going to say, I forgot. This is like coming off of like early in Hemsworth's turn as Thor. So,
And so you're kind of sitting there being like, I don't even know why this guy is here. Like the cyber cop seems to have this on lock. And it's like, no, this guy's my roommate. He's the greatest hacker of all time. And here's the other thing. Hemsworth is a fine actor and does have range, but there was no way for him to play this character without it looking like the muscle fatties typing posy messages meme.
Well, he's got to stay. Part of his issue is like, well, if you're going to play Thor for 15 years, you have to stay in a certain amount of shape as you like film those movies every 6 months. Limit the characters you can play elsewhere.
Right, and so like you've got this like fucking bust of Adonis like hunching over a netbook, and I'm like, this is weird. This is getting weird.
Actors can look like anything, Rob.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's like, I think the issue is you never were convinced that this hacker would have chosen that equipment. Right. Yeah, it was like, you know, a Chromebook is all I really need. It's like, no. You're gonna break that thing.
I'm dead.
Also, the villain's plot they gotta stop in Black Hat is just fucking wild. Just wild. But anyway, that's all for Manhunting next year. So, Patrick, what should we do next? Should we take a break?
Sure. Yeah. Well, yeah, we take a break. We did some Battlefield. We did some hacking. This pod's gonna be shortened anyway, so I guess we can't do the break an hour and 15 minutes in and come back for 15 minutes, so I think that makes sense.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Gonna take us out there, buddy.
Great hosting.
That was it.
Okay, cool.
We're out.
That was the break.
Thank you.
All right, cool.
Mr. We're back. I've been playing Solar Ash, the new game. I forget the developer's
Heart Machine.
Heart Machine, yes. They did Hyper Light Drifter, a game I wanted to like. You know, I think we've all had this moment where this is especially in the era. Back when like I went to events all the time and was like meeting developers in person. Really like the folks that work on that game. Mm-hmm. Love the look of it. I was at Giant Bomb, I think, when it came out. And so it was like constantly like every new trailer is like we hand put the trailers up on Giant Bomb, like so that it was like part of like the the technical term we would use in for Giant Bomb, I don't know if that's used everywhere else, like the river, which is like where all the content appears on the front page. And I just was really excited for that game. And it came out and I was sort of on it. I thought it had a great look. I know. Huh. Like it seemed like a game made for me. I didn't dislike it. Definitely. But there are times where like you meet these people, you're in sync with them, you love talking to them. The game looks great. The demo I played was great. And then the full thing comes out and I don't know. I liked it, but I didn't love it. And that really bummed me out. Like it's like kind of sucks when you have that experience where you're like, I'm ready to play the game that was made for me. And then like halfway through, you're like, ah, I have to reconcile my actual feelings about this thing. And so, Solar Ash, a game that was, I think it was announced like two Game Awards ago, I believe is where that game was first shown. Solar Ash is the new game from that studio. The best way to describe it is to be reductive. And what if you were to mash up Jet Set Radio, a game in which you are like exploring a big landscape, you can grind on things, you are kind of you literally have booster skates that you can give yourself so you can like quickly move across an environment and also like boost yourself forward and do double jumps and all those sorts of things. And then what you're doing is exploring. I can get to the premise in a second, but exploring this really trippy, spacey landscape to unlock. Well, you're stabbing these big glowy eyes, which are attached to a monster, and you do enough of those, and then what you do is you trigger a kaiju, a monster straight out of Shadow of the Colossus, and then you have to skate over. You have to skate around the environment to find a way to get onto this creature and then also stab it in the eye several times so you can kill it. All the while, like synth, like 50s, like some sort of strange mashup of like modern sci-fi synth music blazoned with like the kaiju music from like the 50s and 60s plays. I'm really liking this game. I was pretty mixed on it to start, but I like three areas in, I find myself really taken by it. The setup is something along the lines of you play these characters called Void Runners. They are like able to tap into some mysterious energy in their planet that gives them special powers. And they've been sent to try and save their planet, which is about to be consumed by like a black hole sort of thing. And so they're sent to this place where a bunch of Void Runners were already sent and things went wrong. And you're trying to figure out why things went wrong. And as it turns out, the place you've landed is full of old other societies and civilizations that have been sucked up by this like magic black hole. And so like the different areas you're going to are like you exploring other people who have failed to succumb to this fate that is now looking like it's descending upon your own civilization. And yeah, it's just really stylish, extremely fun to move around. There is combat, but it is mostly a game about walking up to like a vista, seeing a giant space in front of you and realizing, all right, how do I go tackle the three objectives that I need to get to, which are like the three eyeballs I need to stab that then unlock the monster you need to fight. And then you move on to the next one. And I found the exploration to be really satisfying and it's like a joy to get around in the world. I wish there were a couple more mechanics for like moving. It's like kind of limiting in that regard. Because you essentially become like the expansiveness of your ability to navigate the space is like, what are the things the game's going to give me in front of me? Like, are there grind rails here? Is there this black goo that I can climb on? Because absent that, it's like you can roller skate and you can boost and you can jump. And then there's the added element of I forget what the actual like proper noun that they give it, but it's basically like you can slow down time. And you can like use like a grappling hook type thing to get to things a little further in the distance, which allows you to sort of like chain attack to an enemy that is a little further away than how you'd normally be able to attack them, or, you know, attach yourself to a ledge and get to a different place. But I'm actually liking this one quite a bit more than I did Hyper Light Drifter. And I was afraid in the first, because the first half an hour, I think, starts pretty slow. And I was like, oh no, I'm doing it again. I spent 2 years getting hyped for this game off of stylish trailers. And then, like, the actual movement of it, like, in the controller and some slight performance issues on the PS5 were like, oh no, we're doing this again. A game I'm going to like but not love. But I don't know if I'll love it, but I am definitely really liking Solar Ash so far, which is, I think, out on PS5 and PC, and is quite stylish and quite good. And like Jet Grind Radio plus Shadow of the Colossus is that's a cool combination in my book.
That sounds cool.
I feel like it's like kind of gone under my radar for a while. Like,
yes, I agree. I had kind of forgotten it was coming out, and then it quietly got delayed. Like, it was just come out in October, I think, and then got pushed back to December. Like a lot of games, like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. It was like a game when I first saw the original trailer. I was like, damn, hell yeah, I want to play that. And it was like 2 years later, like, oh, right, like Solar Ash is out. But I feel like that's also this year, especially where like a lot of AAA stuff has been shuffled around and weird in different ways. There's just been a collision of independent games. I mean, like September was like really brutal, where there's just like, you know, it was like Eastward and a shitload of other things seemed like they all came out within a 2 week span.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. Like, it's probably hard to market, you know. How do you get an indie game to break through? It's like, well, yeah, you know, it's challenging. But this one seems pretty good. I don't know. Rob, you played a strategy game, right? Rob's Strategy Corner? You were very excited.
From host Patrick Klepek.
Well, you know, when you don't have notes in front of you, you have to then realize you're concluding.
You have notes.
You open took the torch.
Open the notes.
No, I'm not looking at them.
We all have the notes.
The notes.
You took the talking stick.
The Vice News. Vice new game. I don't look at that shit. Vice, you think games? I look at that document? No.
We all have access.
I haven't looked at that
it.
In my life. Why would I type in it? Right, I'm not going to do
so,
it.
So, yeah, Company of Heroes 3 has a multiplayer alpha going.
Well, you didn't know you could talk about it. And then you, like, it was clear you scrolled through your inbox and saw an email and was like, oh, shit, I can talk about Company of Heroes.
Well, because I played it a week ago, right? It was one of those things where, like, I played it before they announced that they were going to have this, like, open alpha thing. And then I was like, well, okay, don't talk about this game that you're really enjoying playing. And so that just goes out of your head because you didn't play it for a week. Yeah, so this is the, like, the last alpha that they had for Company of Heroes 3 showed off some of the single player campaign. This was showing off the multiplayer and the skirmish. And like, without getting too much into it, in some ways, this is very much like what a Company of Heroes game is. You know, if you're not familiar with the series too much, it's a World War II RTS that's really based around like squad tactics and like using terrain. It's really more about that than like, well, a good point of comparison is Relic also just made Age of Empires 4 this year, right? That's very much a game where it's kind of macro focused, like the stronger economy, taking over more, like more and more map control and like having a pipeline of units is kind of what's going to get you the win there in Age of Empires. Company of Heroes historically has been kind of the opposite of that, where it's much more about if you control your units efficiently, they can have an outsized impact based on compared to the resources they cost. So like if you're really good at working infantry units, they can like do way more damage to like really expensive tanks than you would expect, because you are like being like cannier about managing their cooldowns and positioning. That's happening across Company of Heroes. Company of Heroes 3 is operating sort of in that tradition. There are a few like changes they've made to the formula. And I think for me, the difficult part is I'm not sure they're bad changes. They're a little bit unintuitive to describe. Like, I would lose y'all so fast if I started breaking down what really separates this from Company of Heroes 2 or 3, because like, just to give you like an example, one of the things that like the Wehrmacht army can do is you have a choice of three different commanders that you pick. Like I'll be this kind of commander, or like it's
what are my differences? Am I like, I'm a
fortifications guy, commando okay, guy.
All right.
Like Blitzkrieg guy. Those choices change the special abilities for every single unit in your army. And so depending on which commander you're playing, like a unit will have just like completely different, like active or passive abilities that change how the unit plays. So like, I think like, I want to say I was playing the like commando type and the basic German armored vehicle. It's not a tank. It's like a Stug assault gun, that got a passive ability where, if it's sitting stationary, it becomes invisible due to camouflage netting. So it becomes like this like trapdoor spider type thing where it gets like the first attack and it's hard to scout. If you are playing a different commander, a different ability pops up. The Americans do not have this. The U.S. Army, you pick each army sort of achieve, each unit achieves veterancy and you pick an ability. Based on like what now you want this unit's special ability to be. And so like, this is kind of the stuff you're doing is there are really different ways of creating a build based on which army you're playing. And that can be like, it's cool, but it's not really intuitive and it's kind of hard to describe. It's a system that is way easier to like sort of suss out as you play than it is to say like, here are the differences between these armies. That's the part I'm still kind of wrapping my head around. The other big change is probably that traditionally this is a series where, really kind of straightforward that you either had units in like high cover, low cover, or like no cover. They've added like height, differentials. So like if units are shooting down at units in cover, the cover is negated. And they've created really terrorist maps so that will come into play. Not everywhere. It's not like you're constantly trying to parse like what's higher, what's lower ground, but you do have this sense of, the map having like advantageous and disadvantageous, like positions to occupy, and it changes up the map control dynamics in a way that was kind of cool. Like it sort of changed the, in previous games, the reason you would fight over a central resource point is because like, I don't know, it was a valuable resource and you just wanted more of that. Now, like in addition to the fact there might be valuable resources up there, it really does become a position where you can kind of dictate map flow in a way that like, if someone doesn't hold that ground, they have to navigate like a more complicated shooting gallery. So it, you know, it's, I think it is more Company of Heroes, which is cool. I think they've made some things that will be welcome for people who've sort of struggled to get into these games. The big one being like that you can pause and give orders, so that you are not constantly like trying to both read the descriptions of what these abilities do and then figure out how to use them. Kato.
Oh, no. I was just, like, surprised that you can, I mean, you know, it's an RTS, real time, but that's nice, actually, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cool thing to do for skirmish mode, because that's always been kind of the hurdle, is skirmish mode, like, it's a good place to learn the game, but you still have to, like, get good enough to, you're trying to learn openings and timings, and then right. Also you have to figure out like what each of these units do. And that can be a bit tricky if the AI, like if the AI is an easy mode, it's so passive that you don't really like have to figure out how to use any of this. But if you like crank it up, the entire thing turns into a test of how quickly can you go through an opening. This is kind of cool because it will give you a chance to figure out, well, how does this game work? So that's welcome. It's one of those things where I think it will help people get over the learning curve. I think it will make it easier to see why the Company of Heroes games are cool. I am kind of curious whether or not that moves the needle in terms of people who've already decided the Company of Heroes is not for them. Like, I think again, it comes back to Company of Heroes 3 is really interesting because they are trying hard with a way more ambitious campaign to try and like bring in people who maybe like Total War games, but have fallen off of like real-time strategy games. And I think with like the pausable real-time stuff in Skirmish, they're also, again, trying to leave openings for people who are like intimidated by RTS games to get back into it. I think that's all cool. But when I'm playing the Skirmish with like no pausability and I'm just like, you know, dealing with a hard AI or something, Company of Heroes 3 is still pretty merciless and fast paced, right? It's still a game where like shit can go real wrong real fast and you have to be able to intuit really quickly like how to get your way back in based on like what resources you have at hand. So like,
is it like,
I think it's, yeah.
Is it like extremely micro focused or more like balanced between, you know, making sure you're hitting your, using your resources well, but like you don't, you can kind of just send things to auto attack once you have a good position?
No, you got it. Like, yeah. It's
that's very the, that's the whole pitch of Company of Heroes is extreme, is like extremely, you're going to point micro. And click.
Yeah.
It's well, you point and click in a squad. Or at least I remember that being the whole pitch when the first Company of Heroes came out and we were moving past like, you know, the Command and Conquerors and World of Warcrafts of the world, where it's like drag and, you know, your mouse and put a rectangle over 60 units and click over here. And Company of Heroes was like, what if you could zoom in on like individual units and click on them? And
hand place guys them. Behind a sandbag barrier that you built, which is still like,
I read that article in Computer Gaming World. That's what I remember about.
Well, and now they have even exaggerated that because like, in the past, if you like fired an armored vehicle from behind, you got a damage bonus. Now, if you just get a flank shot on an armored vehicle, you get a, it's like 1.5x damage versus like the attack from the rear being like 3x damage in terms of like how devastating it is. And so like it now is really, you can't take your eyes off your good tanks for a second. You're like, the minute you deploy one of those, you're just like, okay, nobody better fuck with this thing.
You got hotkeys on there. You gotta
but this Bacato, all of them units got different hotkeys.
Yeah.
Because they got the different abilities. So it's a lot. It's going to be a lot to internalize. Their hope is that they've given you enough ways to sort of gently onboard yourself that eventually you will, or if you just want to like press the buttons with the mouse, that you won't be like impaired from playing that way. I guess the one thing I will add is, here's the one thing in which they do have you sending units out to just like fuck with some shit. Now every army seems to have different ways to back cap points, because in Company of Heroes, it's territory control. If you break contiguous control lines back to their HQ, they don't get resources from the forward positions they occupy. You can cut the supplies. So back capping ends up being a huge part of this game, where like you might be microing units on the front line in a battle, but it does help a lot if you can take your eyes off that for 1 second and send like a really quickly like a scout unit to one of their like starting positions and start capping it, so that while they're focused on the fight, you have quietly just cut them off from all the resources that they control on the map. And that's a good way to sort of, but they're doing it to you. So, but there's a lot of like harassment in that way. But yeah, it's cool. Like, I like it. I love me some Company of Heroes. And like, there is a lot to it. And I guess the thing I found most encouraging is that in the past, especially Company of Heroes 1, which I do tend to agree is like the strongest one, games can feel kind of deterministic from a certain point. Like, it doesn't take long before like you start to feel like, this game is trending away and there are not a lot of ways to like bring it back around. Here it does feel like they've left more ways for you to like, okay, well, if you lost out on like the fuel and ammo are the big ones, the big resources, but manpower is your base resource. If you are kind of stuck on one resource, or you have a surplus of one, but like a real lack of the third, there are now, it feels like there's more robust ways to like find a play based on those resources rather than just sitting there and being like, well, I guess I'm just fucked. But again, like, you are going to have to discover those. Like, it will force you into playing a different way. Yeah.
Right. That sounds cool.
That sounds compelling and like something I will need to train for years on much easier RTSs to ever have the, like, I don't even know, the game sense to be able to navigate a game like that.
I think this is
an RTS player.
This is the weird thing. Like, I think RTS games are, some RTS games I think are just not fun if you do not go to that effort. I think, like,
right,
in a lot of ways, I would say maybe StarCraft was kind of that way.
Oh, absolutely.
And I liked StarCraft, but, like, I don't think it was a lot of fun unless you really internalized, like, how StarCraft works. And, like, they did their best with the campaign, but, like, you're still playing the base game.
Yeah.
Even if the units are changed around. Here, I think they're trying hard, and I think they're broadly succeeding at creating a thing that will, like, be kind of cool and nifty, even if you are not playing it, like, pro strats level. And Okay. So that's kind of my hope. And I think there have been a few RTSs that have succeeded in this way. I think I think the genre has a problem where so much of the conversation ends up being about game balance and like high skill play that what kind of gets lost is that, like, you can play it as a fun sandbox.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but I would say RTSs are one of the genres of video games that feel the most obtuse and unapproachable as a new player without having like a friend to guide you or just spending a lot of time in like YouTube tutorials and beginner's guides.
Well, it's also a genre in which, like, at the, you know, the era that I got into it of playing Command & Conquer and World of Warcraft, where it's like, hey, actually, I mean, yes, there's a multiplayer component that like came out of those, but they were primarily like narrative based campaign games.
Yeah.
That you also just happened to be playing a strategy game. I was super into the Command & Conquer games and World of Warcraft. And then at some point I fell off them, and like StarCraft 2 was sort of like the end of, hey, we're going to treat these strategy games as like big budget, mainstream, like commercial storytelling. And I mean, a lot of that.
Do you mean Warhammer? Like
the, huh?
World of Warcraft?
No.
Not World of, just Warcraft.
No, regular Warcraft.
Regular. Okay, you said before the World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
Before the. So sorry. I was confused.
Yeah. My brain was just breaking.
I did not mean to. I broke your brain, and then your response completely threw me off. I was like, what the fuck is she talking about? And then also happens like before like the rise of games like Dota and like that, right. the whole strategy genre gets like scrambled. And they just don't make games like that anymore. Or they're like, they're really hardcore focused, like a Company of Heroes. Like there really isn't, or at least you correct me if I'm wrong, Rob, but like there's not really sort of like the mainstream baby strategy game. It's like, I want to like line up the tanks and watch them blow up the base. And like,
the thing is, I think you're wrong, but that's only because like the idea of the RTS has kind of been poisoned in the mainstream like imagination. Like, I think, like, mind you, I think the RTSs that succeed in like not being this just tend to not get a lot of love. Like, I think, like, Patrick, I think you genuinely dig like Homeworld Deserts of Karak, which is a very much like
had one.
I am
ready.
Like, I love to line up the tanks.
Yeah, have these fucking names, like the most fucking game ass names.
Well, like, but Natalie, that's what happens when you're not allowed to launch a new IP. It's got like Homeworld is a brand. Well, or is it a Homeworld? So Homeworld's a space game. Is this a space game? No, it's a tanks game. It's like, well, how does that work? Well, it's because we're on the deserts of Karak. Haven't you always wondered where did the Homeworld mothership come from? And I was like, no, I guess I didn't, but I'd be open to hearing about it. And they're like, let me tell you. Like, it turns out they basically played an entire Homeworld game on like Dune. And it's fucking awesome.
Is Dune the planet?
In so many words, basically. Like, it's a desert planet. It's, like, it's very, okay. Like, it's all sand crawlers and,
Dune
like,
is
giant.
The name of the planet, though.
No, this is different. Oh, shit, I fucked up. This has nothing to do with Frank Herbert's Dune.
Okay.
But the vibe of the game is 100% Frank Herbert's Dune.
But in Dune, Frank Herbert's Dune, is Dune the name of the planet?
No, the planet's name is Arrakis.
Is the worm Dune?
Who's Dune?
Stay tuned for the Dune 2 to find out who's Dune. Dune 2. Look who's Dune.
You could argue the worm is Dune. It's the essence of like the world and the universe. Yeah. It's the great maker of Arrakis. But no, the worm is not Dune. The worm is the worm.
Oh, okay, cool. I don't know anything about Dune.
Did you see that scene with Chalamet?
No.
Oh, okay.
Did I see Timothy Chalamet?
Was he?
Yeah.
Have I seen him?
Have you seen
I had
him
a
on
class
the street?
With him at NYU. Yeah.
Wait, what?
I have. That part, yes.
Was this back in his Xbox controller YouTube days?
I don't know. No, he had already, I think, I don't know. I don't know the timeline particularly well. But
did you talk to him or he was just like in the room?
No, yeah, we chatted.
Like about what? What did you talk to Timothy Chalamet about?
Oh my God.
Machiavelli.
Okay.
Oh, like the Prince or the Discourses?
Both. It was a class. It was
nice.
I can't remember if he was in my, this was a small class. It was like a 12 person class. But he was either in my Plato / Machiavelli class or he was in my class called Theorizing Impasse, which is about the 2016 presidential election. So one of those.
Plato cross Machiavelli. That's an interesting
I think it was that one. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a
well, it was a two-part class, so you could take, it was like two credits. Each one was two credits, so not everyone that did Plato came to Machiavelli, not everyone that was in Machiavelli came to Plato, but they split the semester in two, so I did both. I think he was in both. I don't remember, but yeah.
That rules. The life of Natalie.
Always tell you.
A blessed gamer and a blessed to be around... Actress Dune,
very inflected by Machiavelli.
Yes.
Like the first book of Dune is entirely about like better to be loved or feared. The wise prince, like what is the source of strength of a nation? It's all
fuck
that
yeah.
Shit.
Maybe I should read Dune.
Yeah,
I think it's cool. I think there's things about it that don't. There's things about it, like that whole era. Lots of things don't age.
Yeah.
That's cool. I'm all about those Fremen. Just whooping ass.
Are Fremen women that are friends?
Oh. Jesus Christ.
Okay, so the thing is, the entire, like, the world of Dune, it's all governed by this empire. And the strength of the empire is really the strength of their military corps, the Imperial Sardaukar troops, who are the greatest troops in the galaxy and nobody can stand against them. The great mistake that Duke Leto Atreides I has made is that he's begun to train his troops to a standard that might even exceed the Imperial Sardaukar. And over the long sweep of history, the empire recognizes this will be a destabilizing force. So... They hand Leto a poison chalice and give him control of the critical desert planet of Arrakis, which produces the spice that makes interstellar travel possible, a.k.a. Dune.
Yeah.
But it is a trap. He goes there. He gets murked by the Imperial Sardaukar and his arch rival, House Harkonnen, and his son Paul is cast out into the desert where
he
encounters. Pardon?
Why is his name Paul?
Because he's just some dude. He's like kind of a normie rando.
There's a TikTok I need to send you, Natalie. Remind me after this recording. That is
so Paul goes out there.
There's only one Paul in the world, and it's the chimpanzee from Jimmy Neutron. Hi, I'm Paul.
Hi, I'm Paul.
That's the only Paul I recognize. Okay,
wow.
So tell me about this false Paul.
No, I mean, he's
don't spoil the rest of Dune. Rob just took you to the end of the first Dune movie. Don't spoil the rest of Dune for
that
me.
That was the end of the first movie?
No, because I didn't explain who the Fremen are. The Fremen are the people of the desert on the planet of Arrakis who've been occupied for you know, centuries at this point, but they're also some of the fiercest fighters in the galaxy, and maybe even organically, secretly, are just better troops than the Sardaukar, and they are legion, but the strength has never been realized or tested. They just need someone to awaken and lead them.
Like a Paul.
So this is the third military faction that you've mentioned, correct? Because there was the
They're not a military yet.
There's the big one, there's the mini one, and then there's just these Fremen.
Yeah.
Well, what is a faction but a set of people, Kato?
We're a faction. We're the waypoint faction of being epic.
Now, the thing is,
there's an RTS we should play.
What?
One could say the movie could, which is the one with all the FMV shit.
Yeah, the one with all the FMV shit.
Because that's the one I want.
The one with Gimli. That's Dune 2000.
That one rules. I love it.
Yes.
Also, ironically, Dune is like argued like to be the first real-time strategy game. Not the book, but the book, the game that Westwood Studios made out of.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that brings us full circle.
Yeah, yes. This was a relevant tangent.
And now we're going to, Rob, we're not going to talk about Sherlock. I'm not going to talk about No Longer Home. We're going to skip to letters because I have one calling out to people on this podcast. Hello, my pointed parasocial friends. That's a very funny way to start an email. Long time, first time. This comes from Sam G from Detroit, Michigan. Long time, first time. I typically like to keep to the shadows online, but I had to write to express my utter shock and disappointment. And not only Natalie, but in our ever trustworthy producer, Kato.
What
could ever have me so shaken, you ask? Well, when talking about Voice of Cards, the Isle Dragon roars. But with Natalie and Kato, we're sure that the narrator of Mr. Yokotaro's latest super budget game was a rando, cheap, and a relatively unknown voice actor. Mm-hmm. This is most definitely not the case. The narrator is, in fact, Todd Haberkorn, a voice actor who's been active since 2006 and was currently most well known for being the voice of everyone's most lovable rogue in Destiny 2, the Drifter. It's especially distressing to realize this while listening to the podcast, because I'm sure in the same episode, Robin mentioned how great he'd been doing in Gambit. Also, if I remember correctly, didn't Kato and Gita get a cameo for him thanks to some particularly well done Destiny raids?
Yeah.
For shame. Now, to be fair, Haberkorn is not in top form as the GM and voice of Cards. The game seems to have made in a very compressed timeline with as tight a budget as Square could get away with, giving Yokotaro. I imagine there wasn't enough budget allocated for the devs to do more than have him get through the script on a tight deadline and hope for the best. Also, having beaten the game myself with both VO options, holy shit, because the whole reason we talked about that game is how it seemed really difficult, I do not recommend using the Japanese VO or the English VO, because if anything, the Japanese voice actor ends up sounding more bored than Haberkorn, and a number of gags do not come across that well when reading the text against the VO. In the end, the game is mostly a proof of concept that shows the framework Yokotaro and friends are trying out with Voice of Cards. Cards can get the job done if you want to make something for super cheap. I recommend checking out the demo, because the main game is really what's just in that demo, just with enough content to fill out 10 to 20 hours instead of 1 to 2. Thanks for all that you do.
Shout outs. Thank you for the I am realizing.
Kato, you seem particularly
I don't struck. Like I don't particularly like the Drifter, so
what? Like,
the Drifter's just dumb.
Whoa.
Wow.
His vibes are off to me personally.
I mean, no, he's a shitbag, but he's funny. I mean, I don't like him as a person. I like him as a character.
I mean,
but yeah, we were in that group that got that fucking cameo.
That cameo from him
as the Drifter.
I apologize. My sincerest apologies for dragging.
I think we were both speaking to what the voice came off as, not necessarily the voice acting itself, but the way it's written, right, and the way it was directed, and I think that. Our opinions can hold there. Like
I'm sure he did a great job with what like he performers. Was... Performers take the L sometimes like just what they had to go out and work with.
100%.
Yeah,
100%.
It's not like
I don't. I see. For me, I do not fault. I guess what I was trying to say in the last episode when we talked about this, and what I'm usually talking about when I'm talking about this, like this all comes back to direction. It's not on, like, whenever I see or hear a poor performance or something that, like Cowboy Bebop, for example. A lot of people are talking about Cowboy Bebop. A lot of people are talking about Ed, the character. Like, to me, it is not on the actor when something is not landing for me. Most of the time, what it comes back to is poor direction. So in dragging the voice acting last week or whenever that was, what I was really dragging was the poor direction. Like, it was just you don't do that without, you know, you give a performance and the director's either like, yeah, you got it, or nah, that's not it. So honestly, like, that was the performance.
Honestly, I think a lot of it does lie in the script itself being just kind of boring, and like, he wasn't given much to work with either way. Not even just in like how he was directed to. Like, I think it was just kind of like,
to me, it sounds very rushed, because I imagine most of this was done in like a few voice sessions, because there's really not much variation between inflection. Like, it is like the most monotone performance. It's like extremely one note, which is fine. I like the game. I don't like the game, but yeah, I just didn't love the voice acting. But thank you for the correction.
Clarification.
The context.
The context. So,
In keeping with that theme, clarification, context. I forget why we asking about a bullet falling from the sky.
We're trying to learn about
Battlefield 2042 and a skyscraper.
Yeah, people were shooting down a skyscraper onto Rob's head because he was at the bottom of the skyscraper, and I was like, "Would the bullet like be affected by gravity and go faster if it's being shot down?"
And so that was in the context of Battlefield, right?
Yeah, 2042.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So I'm gonna click this. I'm gonna need everyone to open up this PDF.
PDF. Okay.
This comes from Gnarled. Kendrick. Hey, Waypoint crew. I have good news about the bullet trajectory debate. You are all sort of correct. Kaido's correct about the bullet experiencing some acceleration as it travels onto Earth. Rob is correct that the amount of acceleration experiences would be negligible. Mm. Natalie is correct that Earth is big.
Yeah, baby.
I did the math, which shows the first 2 points, which I've included, which is this a PDF.
This is broken for me,
it's
by the way.
It's broken for me, too.
Oh really?
Yeah, it says zero bytes.
All right, hold on. Let me
double
save
check
it.
The U. Yeah.
And then reattach it.
I want to see the math.
Show me the math.
I can't believe they did the math.
Werner Herzog voice, show me the math.
Oh, that one's got bytes. So
I would
this
like
one
to see,
should
see the math.
While you look at that, I'm going to attempt to read this explanation that comes from Kendrick. Understanding that the Earth is big can help explain the acceleration due to Earth's gravity, which is the same for everything on Earth up to 5 or 6 kilometers in the Earth's atmosphere. Gravity is a force exerted by everything that is mass. The Earth is so massive that the other forces exerted by anything else is essentially negligible. The gravitational force exerted by the Earth on you is... Okay, thank you. There are so many zeros. Thank you for putting in parentheses what that number is. 100 million times stronger than the force exerted by a fully loaded cargo airplane on you. That's if the plane is 10 meters away from you. If you calculate that force using the distance used for the Earth, radius of the Earth, the force Earth exerts is... Oh, this time there's so many zeros and they didn't include it. It's a lot of zeros. It's a huge amount of zeros times stronger. The main takeaway is that if you're calculating the net force an object experiences in free fall, only forces present are gravity. You can ignore any gravitational force that isn't Earth unless you're doing very specific kinds of physics, which means that in free fall, an object's net force is just the force due to Earth's gravitational pull. Since net force is the main way to determine acceleration of an object, parentheses, Newton's second law, F equal ma, where m is the mass of the object falling. You can use that together with Newton's law of gravitation. Not going to read that math equation out. And come to the conclusion that the acceleration of an object due to Earth's gravity is the same for every object independent of the falling object's mass. That went on longer than I intended, and I'm not sure how legible it is, because physics, regardless of complexity, can be weird and non-intuitive. Thanks for all the work you do. It's really been nice to listen to you talk about games and stuff for the past 3 to 4 years when I started listening. Was that intuitive? No. But you did so much work that I felt the least I could do.
It's a little diagram
was
on
attempt
here.
To, was attempt to read it and then share this PDF with everyone that has.
I remember the quadratic formula.
I don't think we talked
recognize
about
that.
That has anything to do with physics.
It does. They used it in this math.
Did they? Where?
1 over 2 times parentheses something t squared minus 760 t plus 300, where t equals 3.393 seconds. This
not...
is the time for the bullet to reach the ground.
I think that's the just quadratic... calculating the velocity of the bullet. The quadratic form is, wait, I knew a song. I had a song.
Yeah, it was
mnemonic.
Like, da-na-na-da-na.
Yeah.
No, yeah, nailed it. All right, last question. We're going on this. Nick writes.
Hey, Nick.
I'm curious about this. What is the proper amount of paper towels for a small, medium, or large spill? They're asking for a lot. I'm going to say, okay. I'm going to say medium, like a medium. So it's like a full glass of water, right? Like it's not all over the place.
Depends on the type of towels you got.
Glass. How big is that glass though?
I guess maybe the better way to phrase this is like when you got a spill, regardless of size, right? How many paper towels are you grabbing to start? Because it's not one.
A big spill.
No, I'm just saying a spill. Let's just say a spill just in general, like bare minimum, where are
two.
You starting?
Bare minimum two, because one, to sop it up, then you're going to need the two to apply water to
but are But are you stacking those together,
is that
or
one
are you
the
doing
other?
Them separately?
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm being completely honest, I am reckless with my paper towel usage. Absolutely reckless. I could do better. I would like to do better, because I use so many paper towels.
So you're pulling like seven, and you're realizing like it.
I'll pull seven.
Dry.
This is my chaos. Okay, I'll pull seven, and then I'll take like two off of that, and then I'll start, and then I'll just pull one for each off of that, and then the leftover towels that I have, I'll just leave on the counter for the next spill, and. Yeah, that's my chaos.
You see, I will pull too many, and I've gotten in the habit of pulling too many because our dog is old and she has a lot of accidents, and so it's just like in pee want to get fully cleaned up. But I will pull too many, and then I don't put them on the counter. If they're like two, I'll just like try and stack them on top of the paper towel thing and bend it just slightly so that it's there.
It's like
my wife's
like
always
bonus.
Annoyed by it. It's like, just throw it out. It's like, no, I'm going to use
They're
it.
Still,
like,
it's still good. That's the thing. It's like when you have dogs, animals in general, babies.
Yep.
When you're
always
dealing with like bodily fluid spills. I caretaked for my great grandma for a while. You're pulling massive amounts of paper towels because you want to put as much barrier between you and the bodily stuff that's happening as you can. So you're reckless. I'm reckless.
Rob, you've just been staring for a long time.
I'm sure Rob has like fucking like linens that are sustainable, and he hand washes and hangs out to dry every morning. And I'm just gonna feel like a piece of shit right now.
So I keep a lot of dish towels in a cabinet couple large stacks for spills and such that when I wipe up a mess, I can throw it in the laundry. And
we do that as well. Mm-hmm. We do that as well.
Do you use that for Mina's poopies?
No, because Mina doesn't. Like,
oh, because Mina's a perfect animal, and of course would never use the
no,
the rest
no,
of the
no.
Wow.
I am saying it's been a while since we've had an accident to clean up with Mina.
Uh huh. Uh-huh.
Sure. I will sometimes like she does the thing where like dog gets excited, she pees a little bit when someone comes home. Yeah. She does that very occasionally when it's been like a long time since she's seen somebody.
Yeah.
That is a case where I'll be like, I will use a dish towel because this thing has been like used. I've like dried my hands on it, I've cleaned dishes. Now I'm ready for it to like go in the wash. So I'll just throw it on the floor with my foot through a slipper. I will use it to mop up. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, you know, it goes into a corner and it'll be thrown in with the next wash. However, there is a flaw mm-hmm. to this. I don't have enough dish towels for all these purposes. So, yes. like it doesn't make a full load. If I went through every dish towel I had, I would not have a full load of laundry.
Right.
And so I end up eventually with no dish towels because I'm like, well, I'm not going to get those dish towels back until I also, like, strip the bedding. But right. I don't want to strip the bedding because then I got to make the bed.
Who wants to do that?
So then yeah. I'm thrown back on paper towels. And then I have to, like, you know, do my best.
Well, you're doing better. You need than some ShamWows. Love a ShamWow.
That shit is so absorbent. I've got like
that shit is
three,
absorbent,
and I don't have to like wash them that often because you just like.
Well, it depends what the mess is, though, Kato. We've been talking about like animals.
Oh no, here's the thing. That's the difference. If we get into the realm of like bodily fluids, I'm just using paper, not paper towels.
Okay,
but
okay.
But
it's
using
not like
bathroom.
You have your like cat puke ShamWow.
This is my pee ShamWow. This is my poop ShamWow. It lasts weeks before I gotta clean these.
Yeah, yeah.
So
now, I think
absorbent.
For every other spill, we use a Sham. We have a ShamWow. We have separate ShamWows for floor spills and like tabletop spills. And the like cat stuff is like, oh, I'm just gonna go grab some toilet paper. You know, that's what that's for. And just toss it into the toilet paper, into the toilet anyways. But yeah, the ShamWow is like, you can like, you just like.
You've seen the infomercials though, right?
Oh yeah,
like,
yeah.
They're amazing.
It's not really, it's like the Trader Joe's brand of the, it's not a ShamWow.
They're microfiber.
Yeah, it's like microfiber towels.
The
they're
thing with
really
microfiber
good.
Towels though, is sometimes I don't feel like they're actually drying, like they're just spreading
so,
the water
look,
around.
There's different micro, but there's different types of microfiber. Yeah. This is the thing. So they're the ones that are meant to. They are not meant to absorb. They are meant essentially to like wick aside, and that's what they do. But those are often being sold interchangeably with ones that are meant to be like soft and absorbent. And so yeah, like I have gone through this where I'm like, what the fuck is with these towels? This is when I like moved to LA and like I was like, all right, time to kit out this kitchen. Ah, here's a big cheap stack of like microfiber cloths.
Yeah.
The wrong microfiber. So I'm like trying to like do dishes and clean my house with stuff that basically like, I'm sure if I had a bunch of like TV screens to keep clean, they would have been great.
Right.
But instead they're I'm like I need to get this fucking pan clean.
Yeah.
There's the microfiber that you use to clean dust off the
surfaces.
But
where does it designate like, that?
I don't know. But it
you
is.
You gotta just know.
Yeah. I just know that these are for kitchen and specifically to replace towels because it says it's so on the box. So
the other thing for me is I feel like using like reusable towels is like, I don't know. I get like, as soon as I use a towel, I'm like, it's germs zone. It has germs. So like the concept of like drying, I don't know, like when I dry dishes, if I need to, I use a drying rack, but if I have a lot of dishes and I need to dry them, if I'm using like a dish towel, I'm like,
it's just clean.
No,
all it did was remove the clean water.
I don't know if it's clean.
It's
I can't
clean.
Trust
it's
it.
Clean. No, you can. It's you can. However, we do have to run.
I get like. I'm scared.
Yeah, we're cutting. We're right in with your follow up letters about the ShamWow debate. That's gonna. Rob and I have to go do. We have a time sensitive thing we have to go.
Oh,
do,
listen to 3 Who's Ahead this week. I interviewed the developers of Company of Heroes 3 like last week. It's fun. Check it out. 3 Who's Ahead.net.
Okay, it's a wrap on today's episode of Waypoint Radio. If you want Waypoint, you can follow us at Waypoint on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube, Waypoint Vice. We should probably also include Twitch in this, because we Twitch a lot. We be Twitching.
Twitch.tv/Waypoint.
You can follow me at Patrick Klobuck. Kato, where can people follow you?
At @A_Kato_appears.
Natalie.
At Natalie Watson.
Rob.
You can learn more about Three Moves Ahead just by following us on Twitter at 3MA. It's me, Rowan Kaiser, Len Hafer, Troy Goodfellow. We have a good old time. Also, this month for the Three Moves Ahead Patreon, we watched Lawrence of Arabia, which is a lot like Dune if Dune were a smarter movie.
I was on Three Moves Ahead once, but you weren't there.
I made a point not to be.
Yeah.
Jesus. Okay. All right. Our theme music is bought. Is Bowen. The track is... Miss You off his EP Pale Machine. To learn more,
I missed Kato that day.
Zone/Bowen.
I was like, no!
That's it. We'll be back on Monday. We're not doing Animatrix on Monday. We're doing, it'll be later in December. So stay tuned for that. Until then, fuck capitalism. Go home.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Man, the overexposure with this webcam. I think I'm the pale machine. A little too much, Phil, if you ask me. The wand
are
machine.
We the pale machine? Okay, I have time dot is up. My coffee is lukewarm. I'm ready to go.
That's life. Lukewarm coffee, it'll do the trick. Not it very will. Fun, but it'll do the trick.
No. Okay.
You just need to mix yourself up some gamer fuel. Get that caffeine going. That real caffeine going. Ah, there it is.
Yesterday's dregs.
Oh, God.
You take the caffeine, you get a little taurine in there, and you're good to go.
Oh, yeah.
You remember balls?
Mm-hmm.
I try to forget.
God, that fucking... What game was that ad for? They had, like, a whole, like, campaign that had to do with some video game that I remember the ad copy was, grab your balls and run. Because it was, like, a horror game or something.
Jesus Christ.
Yep.
That has to be Saints Row, right?
That would be... That feels
that
right.
That makes sense, but
makes
too
think,
much sense.
No, but I think... That, you know, that's tongue-in-cheek. I think this was fully serious. As much as a fucking balls joke can be fully serious.
All right.
Run like
what
hell.
What is that lawn noise?
That's
your mom's groundskeepers.
Yeah. She really loves to do this to me. She really loves it.
Run
and
like
I love it, too.
Run like hell for the PS2. So that was the whole, it was grab your balls and run like hell.
Perfect. All right.
I'm grabbing my balls and starting this podcast.
Yeah, here we go. We're on time.is. Let's clap at 55.
Clap them balls.
Fuck. Okay, I'm ready.
Clap.
Perfect.
Is it?